So, hello everybody from my side. I'm really happy to be here today and have the opportunity to present my paper on intangibles and goodwill today. And I'm looking forward to all these comments and feedback from you. I've already received two reviews from the journal reviewers, which were really helpful to me and allowed me to develop the paper further already, although I have not yet implemented every single comment that was recommended, of course. However, I think it's a very interesting topic today. Namely, I'm going to present a paper on newly recognized goodwill and intangibles. And why is this interesting? I think the overall reason for this is the reason why we are all here today, namely the shift of nowadays business models towards more intellectual capital driven business models. So what do I mean with that? The business model is not only relying on manufacturing instruments or equipment anymore, it's more and more the intellectual capital dimension that gets the real value driver behind those firms. And it's not just only true for digital companies that do like software as a services or cybersecurity or social media companies. It's also true, for example, for car manufacturers or whatever. The intellectual capital component gets more and more important here. While on the other hand side, and that's a thing I think every one of you well knows, intangibles or these intellectual capital assets are very rarely represented in financial statements at the moment. There's only limited possibility to capitalize them. Of course, there's disclosure, but I think this is all the dimension why we are all here today and discussing the accounting, but also the disclosure of these items. And one standard under IFRS, where a lot of these intangibles and also goodwill comes onto the balance sheet, and it's very an interesting standard to look at when we talk about this topic, is IFRS 3, where we look at business combinations. And in the case of a business combination under IFRS 3, I think you all know that, the firms are required to revalue existing assets and liabilities. That's a little bit a side topic today, but they have to identify all those intangible assets and bring them onto the balance sheet. And what is then remaining from the purchase price minus all those revalued assets and liabilities and the intangible assets that were capitalized is then capitalized as recognized goodwill. So goodwill is basically here the plaque number. So both numbers come onto the balance sheet in the case of an M&A transaction and allow us to investigate these effects on the market value and on analyst forecasts, what I'm doing today, to get some insights about the relevance and also the faithful representation of these items. The intention of this study is that we get some insights about both the IFRS 3 standard, namely, there's a lot of criticism with the standard as well, whether it's useful to split goodwill and identifiable intangible assets, and whether this really gives some valuable information for the users of financial statements, but also to draw some insights for the accounting for internally generated intangibles, namely the IAS 38 standard, because we can draw some limited evidence what happens to the stakeholders when they get these information about the recognized or capitalized intangible assets from business combination and maybe draw some insights for internally generated intangibles as well. So this is my research question, whether those two assets are relevant and faithfully represented assets compared or goodwill is a relevant and faithfully represented asset compared to identifiable intangible assets here. So what we basically do is we analyze the effect of the newly recognized goodwill and identifiable intangible assets on both market value in the first step and then on analyst forecasts dispersion in the second step. And some of you might now know that there's a lot of research on value relevance effects of goodwill already. So what's new about this topic? What's new about this study? And against the other studies that are already out there, which document a high value relevance of existing goodwill, this study only looks at the newly recognized goodwill. And why is this interesting? When we have older goodwill or goodwill balances in the balance sheet, this goodwill is from transactions, for M&A transactions that have occurred in the past. And they might be mixed up already with internally generated goodwill of the respective firm. So in this case, when we only look at the goodwill that is new in this year from a certain transaction or for certain transactions, we only have the real goodwill that it should be, and it's not yet mixed up with internally generated goodwill. And we've chosen to also look at the analyst forecasts to get some more information on this faithful representation perspective, because there's a lot of value relevance studies out there, but to get some more insights whether these assets are faithfully represented and really help these stakeholders, namely the analysts, to form better forecasts, it's interesting to look at this figure as well. So we're doing this in an empirical archival study. We investigate German firms that report under IFRS. This is a setting where we look over 10 years and have a lot of hand-collected data, because a lot of the data is not available in the usual databases. And we find that both accounting numbers are highly related to the market value. And there is no real statistical difference between the two in the sense we expected it to be. So both numbers, goodwill and the other intangible assets, are highly related to the market value. Although we would have expected the identifiable intangible assets to be more concrete and as such more highly related to the market value compared to goodwill, which is measured as a plug number and is in such case subsumes a lot of different components which are not not all have the same outcome on, or which should not have the same outcome for market value compared to intangible assets. But nevertheless, they are both highly relevant to the market value. However, we find the higher the proportion of, higher the proportion of newly recognized goodwill in contrast to all the intangibles recognized within this M&A transaction, the higher the analyst forecast dispersion. So it seems that the goodwill is more difficult for analysts to form their forecasts, and it's more uncertain accounting number. So that's interesting here. And it contributes to these both strands. So to the goodwill literature, where there's already a lot of research on the value relevance dimension of existing goodwill, and we give some new evidence about this new goodwill component here, and also on the intangibles debate, where it's always like capitalization, whether it's disclosure, is capitalization useful, are those intangible assets measured reliably enough to be presented in the balance sheet, or is it just not really worth it? So that's basically what we do here. So to come to my hypothesis, I start with the goodwill issue, because when we think about goodwill and its effect on the market value, we have to think what's really behind goodwill. And there is, there are different possibilities to think about goodwill and to split it into different components. But one that has helped me to tackle this topic is to think there was a split up of goodwill from Johnson & Patron, which is already really old. But it really helped me to understand what is behind it and what should the effect on the market value be. Because they said, okay, there is like the going concern goodwill, which is basically the internally generated goodwill of the target firm. So when one firm acquires another, the other firm, the target firm, is more worth as such than just the sum of the individual items valued at fair value. So I think that's pretty clear. The second component is the synergy component, namely that you would think when one firm decides to acquire another, it does so because it thinks as a corporation, as a connection of these two firms, it can outperform the two individual firms. So that is the synergy component. And but due to the measurement of goodwill within IFRS 3 and also within like US GAAP or other standards as well, as a plug number, it subsumes overpayment. And I think that's what we've heard in the presentation before. There is research that managers might overpay for M&A transactions for several reasons. Might it be hubris or opportunistic reasons? But sometimes there is overpayment in those transactions. And this is technically subsumed into goodwill and should not be related to the market value, right? So that is one other component. And the last one is overstatement. And what I mean with overstatement is it should have been a part of the fair value of other assets and liabilities, or of other identifiable intangible assets and liabilities that have, for what reason ever, not been as separately identified or correctly measured. So this is subsumed into goodwill as well. So we see that there's a lot of components that have different outcomes on the market value. So it's a more unconcrete outcome on the market value. I would guess that it is still related, because the synergetic and the going concern goodwill should be highly related to the market value, although we know that synergies are sometimes overestimated by managers. However, when we think of identifiable intangible assets, they are much more concrete and by nature, because they have to be separately identifiable, and you have to figure out a way to measure this intangible asset to be able to separately capitalize it. So as such, it is much more concrete and should be more related or stronger related to the market value compared to goodwill. And that's what our hypothesis here is, namely that a newly recognized goodwill is positively related to the market value, but valued at a discount compared to identifiable intangible assets. Okay, and the hypothesis two is now really easy to derive, because it's basically the foundation that we've already discussed. Because goodwill is so much more uncertain compared to identifiable intangible assets, it's much more difficult for analysts to create a forecast. And as such, the forecast dispersion should be higher. And another argument for that is the impairment only approach, because the analysts do not only have to evaluate whether the goodwill consists of going concern goodwill or just overpayments and at such forecast the future economic benefits of it. They also have to forecast when and in what magnitude the goodwill impairment comes onto the P&L. Because, as you probably all know, we have the impairment-only approach here where we don't have annual amortization but have to test the goodwill for impairment, which is associated with a lot of discretion because of the lack in variability. And as such, that's what I think the presenter before already said, leads to too little and too late impairments. And there's also research showing that analysts do not fully anticipate the timing and magnitude of these impairments, which makes it even more difficult, and even more difficult than identifiable intangible assets, which in most cases at least have annual amortization. So we argue that the proportion of intangible assets recognized as goodwill in the PPA is positively related to the analyst forecast dispersion here. So the more goodwill compared to other identifiable intangible assets, the higher the uncertainty and the higher the analyst forecast dispersion. Okay, so before we deep dive into the results, I just want to quickly fly over the sample because we have a German hand-collected sample here over 10 years. We started the year the IFRS 3 was implemented in Germany and looked at the following 10 years. And then we have chosen the firms that have been listed in the largest German indices in that period. So those are all large publicly listed firms. And we have excluded those observations with M&A activity that resulted in a purchase price allocation that gave us the opportunity to extract those numbers, namely the newly recognized goodwill and the newly recognized identifiable intangible assets. And as we will discuss later, we also have an additional analysis a score developed for the disclosure for goodwill here. And this was all hand-collected via content analysis. So the other data, of course, market data and stuff, was derived from well-known databases. Okay, so this is the empirical model from for the market value study. It's based on an Olsen model, which you might probably know. So the market value is explained by the book value, which is here BFAU, and the net income and other control variables, and we extracted the two numbers, namely newly acquired goodwill and newly and identifiable intangible assets from this book value to have it as a separate variable. So our variables of interest here is REC goodwill and REC IIA, and we expect both coefficients, so beta 1 and beta 2, to be positive and significant. However, we expect the coefficient for IIA to be higher than the coefficient for goodwill, and we also tested whether this difference is statistically significant. And then in the second step, we looked a little bit more in this faithful representation perspective and more in these uncertainty dimension. And we have the standard deviation of analysts' forecast here as the dependent variable. And our independent variable is proportion or the recognized goodwill, the newly recognized goodwill divided by the total intangible assets, namely the recognized goodwill plus the IIA within the PPA. So we expect beta 1 to be positive and significant, indicating that more the higher the proportion of goodwill here, the higher the uncertainty among analysts and hence the higher the dispersion here. Okay, only 1 minute left, so we will quickly look at the result. Two. Okay, perfect. So we can see that everything is significant. No, just fun. Now, they are all highly related to the market value, as we can see. And against our expectations, the coefficient for goodwill is higher than for identifiable and tangible assets, which was interesting to us. This is even statistically significant, but in the wrong direction, I would say, or in the other direction. And it's interesting to talk about why it is so. And when we look about the standard or the analyst forecast model, we can see that it is indeed the case that a higher proportional goodwill leads to higher uncertainty among analyst forecasts. And we have an additional analysis, and I just want to quickly go into this topic and then I leave it for the discussants. We have looked at whether the disclosure that is required under IFRS 3 on goodwill as such helps analysts to form their forecast and ends, leads to less uncertainty here. And we have done this by content analysis. If anyone has a question on this, we can talk about this in the discussion later. But what we find is that when there is a low level of goodwill disclosure, then the results hold. I mean, the uncertainty, the more proportional goodwill, the more uncertainty, or the higher the analyst forecast dispersion. But when there is a high level of goodwill disclosure, so good explanations, what is really behind this goodwill, and then the result is not as significant anymore, only 10% level, and it's a smaller coefficient. And this is slightly significant, this difference. So that is what we have done here. And I've already talked a lot about the implications, so I will very quickly summarize that this has implications both for academia and for the standard set here. For academia, for these two strands of literature, namely goodwill accounting, but also the literature on analyst forecasts and intangible capitalization, which there already is. And it has the standard setting implications also, especially for IFRS 3, to see that it helps, that these two numbers are relevant, but that more proportional goodwill leads to more uncertainty. But it also draws some little implications for IAS 38 as well, because it's one of the only possibilities we have to investigate the capitalization of, for example, trademarks, brands, and etc. Because otherwise, we just don't have the option to investigate it because we can't capitalize it. Okay, so that was my presentation, and I'm really looking forward to all the comments now.
Well, thank you. Thanks to the organizers for inviting me, and I'm going to time myself. So interesting paper by Julia on goodwill and its impact on market values and analyst forecast errors. So context is goodwill is becoming one of the largest items in firms' financial statements. Look at Facebook. The single largest operating asset happens to be goodwill that they acquired from acquisition of WhatsApp. It emerges from M&A transactions, and it is the least understood asset. I'm going to use the word asset. I'm not clear whether it is an asset, but it's the least understood one. In fact, one question for standard setters is, why not call it an accounting plug? Why call it goodwill? And leave it for standard setters to figure it out. So the research question is goodwill as value relevant as other intangibles? And do analysts understand the implications of goodwill as with other assets? So my main concern with the paper, it's an academic paper, so I have to put the reviewer or discussant hat on. That's a crowded research area. I have put, this is a survey paper on the left-hand side. Amir et al., they do a survey of literature and they find tons of paper that examine, is goodwill priced as an asset or not? So it's a very crowded area, so one has to figure out what really are we adding to this area. And I particularly would like to highlight this paper, which shows that identified intangible assets capitalized on European, so we're talking about European, company balance sheets provide more value-relevant information than unidentified intangible assets that are transferred into goodwill. Basically, goodwill is less value-relevant than other identified intangible assets. The research design, as far as authors are concerned, they regress market value, levels of market value after the announcement on newly acquired goodwill and newly acquired intangible assets. And basically, they're comparing the regression coefficients, whether beta 1 is same as beta 2 or not. And my first comment, in fact, Julia finds results which are contrary to expectations. She finds that goodwill is priced, is actually more value relevant than other identified intangible assets. And I believe this could be, there is a fault in research design. On the left-hand side, you should have changes, not levels or market value. And the reason is, and actually she should use event study design, which is when this new information comes to the market, what is the change in prices? The reason for her contrary findings could be that there is some reverse causality going on. Because market values are sticky, and it is possible that if you have more market value, if you're overvalued, then you tend to overpay for the assets. It's well known that in M&A literature that stock is used as a currency for acquisition. So if you're overvalued, then you tend to overpay, and therefore it leads to higher associations with goodwill. I'm just speculating, I don't know, but this could be the thing. Also, I would like PP&E to be included in the equation because what is goodwill at the end of the day? Amount you allocate for PP&E, the amount you allocate towards identified intangible assets, whatever is left over is goodwill. It's a plug at the end of the day. So this term should be included. And so errors in calculating the value of tangible assets plus errors in calculating the value of intangible assets will flow down to error in so-called plug, which is goodwill. Therefore, tangible assets should be included. I believe the most promising area in her paper is disclosures. And I'm not sure whether there can be disclosures about goodwill. Disclosure, again, goodwill is a plug. So how are net assets calculated? How are assets and newly identified assets and newly identified liabilities, how are they calculated that those disclosures lead to understanding of goodwill? Repeating for nth time, goodwill is a plug, and therefore understanding what has gone into calculation before calculation of plug is the one that will help understand the investors. Again, a very crowded area of research. I'll not go into each of these areas. One minor point about the specification, she uses the ratio as the key variable on the right-hand side. Whether the acquisition is $1 or $1 trillion, the ratio remains same. I think what she should do is interact this ratio with deal size. That the greater the deal size and the greater the ratio of goodwill to identified intangible assets, this interaction, if this turns out to be positive, then it will prove her point. So in summary, an important research question, and I'll suggest that improved research design. For me, again, the most important area in her paper is disclosures, the disclosures related to goodwill, but not just goodwill, but disclosures related to valuation of identifiable assets, identifiable liabilities, and then leading it to, and that will help her draw a clear distinction.
Bonjour, mesdames, bonjour, messieurs. After those few words in French, I will revert to English. I'm delighted to be in Paris, in my hometown, in France. And I'm pretty sure that the lights are, because Paris is the city of lights. And since this morning, they have been enthusiastic by what we've heard. So congratulations to all speakers. So first, Julia, thank you for your study and your contribution to the ISB's research phase on its future intangibles project. And I will try to group my comments in three categories and focusing on the first two. And those comments are to enhance the usefulness of your study to the ISB's work. So the first set of comments would be the substantive comments, where I think it would be worthwhile if you could do additional research. So there are three comments there again. The first one is, on numerous occasions throughout your paper, you're referring to analyst forecast dispersion. Yes, it's working. And the paper implies that lower analyst forecast dispersion is better, but without really explaining why it is better. And I'm wondering also whether you are referring to analyst forecast dispersion in appreciating earnings metrics, such as EPS or multiples, or whether you are focusing on a valuation of a business, i.e. then fair values based on transactions or comparables. As your focus in your study seems to be more on the balance sheet, I would be inclined to think that it's the latter, but I'm not sure. And if it's the latter, then my practical experience, I will often refer to my practical experience, because prior to becoming a standard setter, I was a preparer. So my practical experience on performing the annual impairment test shows that the more forecasts are dispersed when you are performing multi-valuations during the impairment test process, the better. And it can be, and of course, that is to value a business. I'm really focusing on that. So that's where I would like to understand if you're focusing on balance sheet items or on measures of performance using P&L or cash flow statements metrics. The second comment I would like to make is on page 9 in the summary you provide there, so the first part of your study, you state, hence I expect newly recognized goodwill to be related to the market value, but less value relevant than intangible assets resulting from the acquisition. So I do not necessarily disagree with your conclusion, but I'm not sure I can, at this stage, agree with this conclusion. And I think the jump to the conclusion is a bit too quick, for me at least, and for the few following reasons. The first is you state somewhere else, those other intangible assets are more concrete information about the extent of future cash flows, as they can be individually identified. In my practical experience, yes, you're right. It's true, and this is because they relate to a contract entailing contractual rights and obligations, whereby goodwill relates to the entire business. That's why it's a residual. I wouldn't call it a plug, an accounting plug, like my predecessor. Then you further state and evaluated at fair value. In my practical experience, I would nuance that a bit, because many fair values are derived from cost measurement-based valuation techniques, such as replacement cost, for instance. So that's not what I would call a genuine fair value. In many of those cases, it's because there, and notably for software development costs, there exists no genuine fair value, as there exists no genuine market to appreciate those. And I would nuance a bit your statement in at the bottom of page 9. I would have said there exists no genuine fair value, as no market exists for many, if not most, of these assets, because for some there exist markets. If you think of, for instance, recorded music catalogs, there is a market for that, above all now. You're making a statement, theoretically the market value equals a firm's discounted future economic benefits. Once again, in my practical experience, many fair values are higher than discounted future economic benefits, which is perfectly fine because they are the effect of the rarity of the assets, they are the effect of the quality of the assets related to others available on the market. And of course, they are also the product or the fruit of the non-tangible benefits provided by the assets, and especially, for example, influence. And I come from a media content communication company. And my last comment there would be probably what you express on pages 15 and 16 of your paper, where it's probably my biggest discomfort with the state of your research at this stage. I will just read the two statements. So on page 15, you're stating, however, against expectation, the study cannot provide evidence of the higher coefficient for identifiable intangible assets compared to newly acquired goodwill. And the second, on page 16, based on the findings that newly recognized goodwill is essential for the firm value from a market-based view, it is even more interesting to investigate whether it is also beneficial for analysts to predict future economic benefits of the firm. I would have liked, in your study, you to analyze the reverse expectation, i.e., what if the fair values of identifiable intangible assets are not beneficial for analysts to predict future economic benefits of the company, and therefore, similarly, if not more, goodwill. I think only then, at this stage, when you will have performed this, just double check or beta test this assumption, would you be able to really state your conclusion expressed at the end of your paper, which states, it highlights that recognizing intangible assets as key value drivers is informative for analysts as market intermediaries. These findings, and that's the piece where I'm a bit hesitant, these findings contribute to the debate on the non-recognition of most internally generated intangibles. maybe it's because, to be honest, I think that in many occasions there are too many intangibles recognized, whether internally or acquired. That's another story. Let's see when we will begin the project at the ISB. I have also a few disagreements with some of your statements because it conflicts with my practice, so maybe I will state those. First thing, and it's not a fundamental disagreement because the standard is internally, the set of accounting standards is internally consistent. So whether you put IFRS 3 or IAS 38 at this stage, you would end up with the same conclusion. But on page 5, I would have also referred to IAS 38, not just to IFRS 3. And it's because then you have a two-step approach in IAS 38 that you don't necessarily find in IAS 33. And the two-step approach is first whether or not the intangible asset meets the definition criteria in IAS 38, paragraph 917. So identifiability, control, and future economic benefits. And then, effectively, there are all the recognition criteria expressed in paragraph 21, which paragraph 33 states that there is a presumption that they are met in the case of a business combination. So I think it's a, It's also a useful thing to bear in mind when analyzing identified intangible assets in a business combination. So my disagreements or the conflicts with my practice, maybe why I'm expressing a disagreement. So I would nuance what I'm expressing there. On page eight, you're mentioning components 3 and 4 occur when managers misvalue existing assets or fail to identify previously unaccounted identifiable assets. Unaccounted intangible assets. So in my practical experience, the largest components of those assets are intangible assets that cannot be recognized in the balance sheet at the acquisition date, such as workforce. That's the reflection of paragraph B37 in IFRS 3, or potential contracts with prospective new customers. And that's B38 in IFRS 3. And if I may just make a comment, I was surprised that in the examples you're providing in appendix, and you've highlighted those in your slides today, so that's why I'm referring to that. The example one on page 38, I cannot really understand from a practical point of view why you consider this is rather poor disclosure. That is the disclosure on Allianz and the explanation on the goodwill generated by Allianz on one of their acquisition. And the reason is because there is an explicit mention that the goodwill reflects potential growth, i.e. potential contracts with prospective new customers, which is the reflection of unrecognized intangible asset based on the requirements in B33 in IFRS 3. And being noted also that the amount of goodwill seems relatively not material for a company of the size of Allianz, $222 million. So I wouldn't expect them to disclose 4 pages on such an acquisition. The second disagreement would be on page 8, where you state, contrastingly, overpayments occur when managers knowingly overpay for targets. Managerialism theory. This can happen for empire-building reasons. And effectively, I dispute that the latter cannot lead to value creation on the long term. I think it should be a bit nuanced then. Also on page 17, you state IFRS 3 also requires the acquiring firm to disclose additional information about the goodwill recognized, especially the factors that make up the goodwill. As discussed in section 2, these disclosure requirements are discretionary and vague, and firms are often not compliant with the required disclosures on goodwill. So it hurts a bit the former preparer I was reading such a statement. So in my practical experience, it is very often because of the following characteristics of this information. And we have discussed that extensively during our BCGI project at the board table. It's forward-looking information, internally confidential information, commercially sensitive information, including synergies. And of course, just to remind everyone that commercial sensitivity is vis-a-vis competitors, vis-a-vis the competition, not vis-a-vis users, even though sometimes users can be competitors when they have invested in an industrial company that is a competitor of your company. So to protect the company, its executives, and its shareholders, the information is simply not provided to avoid any adverse effects, which could lead in many cases to potential litigation risks. These could be also considered, so more the company's perspective there. And the last bit is in line with disclosure on page 17, in line with disclosure theory, firms tend to disclose good information and without that. In my experience, it's absolutely not the case. Companies have a significant incentive, on the contrary, to disclose bad information or bad news. I would call them bad news rather than bad information. It's always good information, even though you disclose bad news. And the reason is because, once again, it's protective for the company, its executives, its shareholders, if you disclose bad news, especially in relation to potential litigation risks going forward. So I will not enter into the detail. I have other few comments. I will not enter into the detail of those, but happy to comment further if you need. Thank you.
And I noticed that I've killed two micros this morning.